Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you. Hello, welcome to the Bike Radar podcast. My name's Tom Arvin, Senior Technical Editor here at BikeRadar.com and the MBUK magazine. Joining me in the podcast today is Warren Roster. He's our Senior Road Technical Editor. How's it going, Warren?
Oh, good. Thanks, mate.
Excellent stuff. And we also have Rob Weaver, who's our Technical Editor in Chief. How's it going, Rob?
I'm good, thanks, Tom. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
What have we both been up to recently? What have we all been doing? Because, okay, yeah.
There is three of us.
Yeah, I'm into the meat of... bike of the year testing.
Yeah.
So and my remit this year is gravel bikes, endurance bikes.
Yeah.
You know, both my particular favourite sort of types of bikes to ride, and also kind of urban e-bikes, which is for on those lazy days in between big road or gravel rides.
Yeah.
I'm still getting out there and
that's great.
You know, doing the shopping.
It's a good category to be doing for bike of the year, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, I just I love that idea of that sort of e-bike is transport. It replaces a car.
Yeah.
And that's great, you know, and I think that's, you know, we should all be looking to do, to reduce our footprint on the road. And you know, I mean, I've found over the last few years that I can do pretty much everything I need to do on an e-bike.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where we got rid of one of our cars because never used it. It was an ornament on the drive. So
yeah.
You know.
Oh, happy days, yeah.
And it razzed past me on the ride home.
Yeah. We should do a bike of the year on rideshare bikes. So we'll do Tier, Boris bikes, and what's the one? Do one of them as well.
Yeah, what's the one in? What's one in Bath? Is it Loop?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
There's Bird. And, Lime.
Lime. Yeah, I was going to say Lime. Yeah, yeah. Is that just London?
Yeah. No, Lime's all over the world. It's massive, yeah.
Oh, is it?
So go to Paris and do the Velib.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did that when the Boris bikes launched. We hired a Boris bike in London.
Yeah.
And took it on Eurostar to Paris and raced around Paris against the Velib. Got a phone call from TfL halfway through the day asking if we'd stolen a bike. So like, yeah, we'd taken it to Paris. We're bringing it back,
guy,
though.
Do you remember the guy who did Von 2 on a Boris bike a couple years ago? Absolutely wild. What a disgustingly horrible way to spend 24 hours. Yeah. Rob, what are you up to? Bike of the year as well.
Bike of the year as well, yeah. Focusing on enduro bikes. So long travel mountain bikes made for razzing downhill, riding back up. So they need to cover a massive amount of, I suppose, a massive amount of things they need to be able to do.
Yeah.
Very much the well, maybe not the Swiss Army knife. I guess that's the trail bike, mm-hmm. but they still need to do a lot of things well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not quite as easy as maybe downhill bikes. Still quite a bit of pedaling.
Yeah, quite a bit of pedaling.
But, you know, I love it. So yeah. It's all good. Yep.
Happy days. Happy days. Well, I've got the trail bikes and I've gone for longer travel trail bikes this year because...
Why
trail
not?
Bikes, why not? I mean, a trail bike can be everything from like a 120 mil at the back to 160 mil at the front. So like, what do you do? So over the last few years, I've been alternating a bit between shorter travel, lighter weight ones and longer travel, more aggro ones. And this year is a longer travel, more aggro version. So up to 160 mil forks, 140, 150 at the back.
So where do they merge then?
Oh,
the long
knows?
Travel trail in enduro. Where do they just become the same thing?
Well, I guess where they differ is that a bike brand will have a dedicated enduro race bike, right? And that line does blur because actually sometimes people race they might do a Stumpy Evo as opposed to an Enduro. So it is very blurred.
But, it's almost brand to brand.
Yeah.
And if they struggle, they'll just create a new category.
Yeah.
You go down country or super Enduro. And then all of a sudden you're like, what am I riding? Oh, it's a down country Enduro trail bike. Yeah. What?
Just riding mountain bikes. It's, yeah, there's great lines. But we, The beer moth that is Bike Raid, I want trail bikes. So,
and we try to do our best explaining exactly
yeah,
what
totally.
They are.
Yeah, and what they're good at. Like, I would say a trail bike has to be maybe better up a hill than an enduro bike.
Absolutely.
But you can get away with it being not quite as good down a hill. A bit lighter. Not going to have like a 38 mil stanchion fork on there for starters.
Yeah.
It's...
you want to do your all-day trail rides as you do on a enduro bike, but there's probably less emphasis on the downhill, which there very much is now on enduros.
Yeah, I would want my trail bikes to also be fun to ride around a trail center blue.
Yeah,
basically.
That's fair.
Whereas I wouldn't expect an enduro bike to be anything.
It'd just be a bit of a slog.
Be a slog.
Yeah.
So
there you go. Well, it's all covered off
there
for
you. There you go. Yeah. This is one of our tech Q&A podcasts where our listeners have emailed podcast@bikerider.com with a tech query for Rob and or Warren to cover off. If you have your own questions, if you've got anything you're wondering about, then don't forget you can email us. It's podcast@bikerider.com with any of your tech Q&A questions or any suggestions or questions in general about the podcast. And we do read it all. So we've got five questions today. There's two roadie ones, two mountain bike ones, and handily one general one as well in the middle. But of course, Rob and Warren are experienced in all forms of cycling, so I'm sure we'll chip in with relevant bits of advice wherever they can. Okay, so the first question is, how much difference could I really feel if I get my new race wheels built up with Sapin Laser or DT Swiss Competition spokes over a more standard Sapin Race or DT Aerolite? Is it worth the added expense? Warren?
Yeah. I mean, spokes can have a major effect on how a wheel feels. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take it down to its most simple form, like a plain gauge spoke will be much heavier than any form of butted, be it single, double, triple. But it will also be laterally stiffer. So in some instances, a plain gauge spoke is probably, you know, for heavy duty kind of, you know, usage, a downhill bike, for instance, or an e-bike where you're talking like, you know, really high torque or whatever, plain gauge is the way to go. And then you're looking at varying stages of them getting both lighter and with less lateral stiffness and therefore, you know, a bit more spring in them and mm-hmm. everything, you know. So a single butted spoke is a bit lighter than a plane, double more so, triple everything. But then when you're moving into the sort of super light double and triple butted spokes, you need to be quite careful about building them, because if you over tension a super narrow, super thin spoke, uh-huh. it will twist.
Okay.
And then you've got bladed or ovalized aero spokes, you know, there's plenty of data out there that will tell you that a bladed or a narrow spoke will give you an aerodynamic advantage. Although I think that's in a straight line in a wind tunnel or on mm-hmm. CFD, et cetera. I think in the real world, there's a bit more for debate there, because that blade is only moving in one direction. If the wind's hitting it from the side, then you know, you're looking at different things. But so what I would say is, like, yes, they can have a positive effect on how a wheel feels. But I would say if you're, you know, it's one of those rare occasions you're actually going to set a wheel built for you. Talk to the wheel builder, express what you want and everything. It's no good if you're like a 115 kilo, you know, sort of Clydesdale rider mm-hmm. getting a wheel set built up with triple butted spokes, because they're going to just flex and be all over the place. You know, so it's like, what am I going to use it for? What sort of rider am I? What do I like? Mm-hmm. How do I like the feel? And then that spoke can influence mm-hmm. what you're doing, you know. And you know, simplest terms, if you're looking at, say, a Sapin, like, so the basic Sapin Race, I think I think 32 spoke wheel, 32 Sapien race spokes is about 190, 200 grams.
Okay.
If you moved up to like a CX-Ray or one of the lighter Sapien ones, you'll knock about 50, 60 grams per okay. wheel out of that. So you'll reduce it quite significantly.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much the same with DT. You know, mm-hmm. DT's basic race spoke and everything, the sort of weight differences are very, very similar. So, you know, if you're building a super light set of wheels for going uphill and, you know, conquering coals and stuff, and you're not an overly heavy rider or you're not an overly powerful rider, you can get away with, you know, building in that super light build. But I would say, think about what you need, think about the sort of rider you are. There's nothing worse than overspending on something that's super light and then it just performs like
yeah.
crap, you know, under you because, it just wasn't designed for you, you know. And yeah, and I think, you know, with modern hub technology, modern rim technology, spokes are less important than they used to be.
Okay.
If you know what I mean? And you also need to, I mean, the caveat on that would be, I would always err on a stiffer spoke because most road bikes and now are disc brake. So mm-hmm. you've got higher torques going through. And, you know, on old rim brakes, you know, I mean, I had on like, you know, old rim brake bikes, which are built up with super light spokes and super light hubs, etc., where you get a kind of really weird kind of wheel wind up. So you uh-huh. brake hard and the bike seems to keep moving, but the tires aren't.
Right.
So you sort of get this kind yeah. of bowing into it. And that can obviously be exacerbated, but on the other end with a disc brake, you know, which obviously has more power and more,
yeah,
you know, more drag onto it.
Now you say that, I can't remember last time I saw a radially spoked wheel. We used to get them quite a lot, right?
Oh, yeah, you used to get radials all the time. Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, radial just doesn't really agree with the disc brake. Yeah.
Okay. So basically speak to the wheel builder.
Yeah.
Ask them to recommend. And if they come back with like a really woolly answer, maybe find a different wheel builder. Yeah, because they should know their salt and help with that.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
But it tends to be. I mean, I think people can kind of look down on something where it's a plain gauge spoke or whatever. Mm. And yeah, if it's a plain gauge spoke made out of mild steel, yeah, it's going to be crud. It's going to be crap. But DT, Sapien, Wheelsmith, and most of the spoke builders, you know, like Pillar and everything, most of their plain gauge spokes are built out of the same material as their high end spokes.
Right.
And it's just they're built to be strong.
Yeah. Different.
It's
purposes.
This different mm. purpose. It's not. It's not a budgetary constraint. It's yeah. just.
Intended yeah. use almost.
Yeah, yeah, intended use, yeah.
And they happen to be cheaper because there's less goes into them.
Because yeah, because they're going into the manufacturer, but they're still, you know, still made out of quality steel.
Yeah. Okay, great stuff. All right, then, moving on to Rob. Can you quickly talk me through what all the numbers mean on headsets? I'm looking at Cane Creek's web shop, and there's so many options. I'm pretty sure only one will fit whatever frame I buy. And again, this is something that I've come up across myself. It can be quite confusing. There is yeah. no one headset standard. This is a topic for another day. But yeah, there's a lot of different things out there.
Yeah. And the good thing with Cane Creek is they have a great explainer mm-hmm. on their site, yep. which kind of covers off all of that stuff. But we'll run through a few bits mm. now just to try to cover it off. So first you need to kind of get your head around your head tube type.
Okay.
Whether it's press fit or integrated.
Mm-hmm.
If you have press fit, for example, you may then have zero stack or you may have external cups. Okay. So both of these are going to need pressing into the frame.
Yep.
Integrated, on the other hand, is where the frame manufacturer have basically fully integrated the headset races into the head tube. So it's molded around that. So you're just popping a bearing into the head tube, basically.
Okay, bearing straight into head tube.
Yeah, you're not pressing cups in.
Yep.
They exist within that already. So then it comes to measuring and how you measure. And to be fair, unless you have a vernier gauge, there's next to no point trying to do this with a normal ruler, because you could probably end up just ordering the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. But you want to be looking at normally like the inner diameter of your head tube, where you're going to expect to see measurements like 30, 34, 44, 49, 56, and 62. Mm-hmm. Alternatively, you can measure the original bearings to check, so the outside diameter of the original bearing. But I have written down an example of a headset to try and give you an idea. So it's the ZS44/28.6 EC44.
Right.
Catchy. Yeah.
No idea.
So ZS44, just upper headset, zero stack.
Okay.
44 mil.
Outside diameter.
So inside diameter.
Inside diameter of the head tube.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a zero stack, upper headset, 44 mil to fit a 44 mil head tube. And the 28.6 is in reference to the stem clamp diameter. So what's going around the steerer.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Which should be pretty standard.
Yeah, which should be pretty standard, yeah. And the EC44, so it's external cup with a 44 mil head tube inside. And then the slash 40 on that is in reference to the crown race diameter, which is going to go over. So it's basically what you're looking at is a tapered steerer. Mm-hmm. So starts at 28.6, finishes at 40. That's a fairly sort of, I'm not going to say common, but that, you know, that's, if you go onto the Cane Creek headset website, sorry, that's what you're going to see, you know, the ZS followed by a number slash whatever the next number might be, which is in reference to the steerer tube, basically the stem clamp, where you're going to clamp your stem, followed by, it could be another ZS, it could be another zero stack, or it could be external cup, which again, both of these need pressing in. Followed by the diameter that you're working towards to give you, again, is the internal diameter of the head tube. And then reference the crown rest diameter. So the bottom of the fork, basically what it's going to be sitting on, the crown rest is going to be sitting on the fork crown.
Yeah.
So you know whether it's tapered or not. Mm-hmm. But my best advice, because that was not clear in the slightest, is to go on the Cane Creek website and go through that, because it has it all explained. It shows you clear examples of what they are, and you just need to try and get your head around.
Okay.
First thing you need to do is either know exactly what you need in terms of head tube on your bike, or look on your bike brand's website.
Where they should be able to tell you most things.
Yeah, most of them will have them listed. And if they're not listed on the spec page, the chances are it will be within the tech docs.
Right, okay.
Tech documents, so which are normally on
a PDF or something, won't it?
Yeah, it'll be a PDF, and you should be able to get information out of there. Worst case, you could call a shop, or you call the bike brand directly, or the distributor in wherever country you might be, and just get that info from them. And that might cut down a lot of the sleuthing that you have to do yourself. You won't have to go out and buy a vernier gauge and accurately measure old bearings or your head tube or whatever it might be. It's daunting, and the numbers are confusing, but once you kind of have a rough grasp on what it is you need specifically,
because
unless you change your bike all the time, it's not, you know, it's a one-off, isn't it?
Yeah.
Once you've done it once, you're good to go. So it shouldn't take too long to work out.
Okay. There's a few things where you might be able to, where you might get sort of tripped up along the way. Like, so if you're maybe trying to put a headset together from bits and pieces, or if you sort of maybe don't put enough thought into it, some forks, I think it's more a road thing or gravel thing, where there'll be like integrated crown races in the fork. That's not so common on mountain bikes, but that's something to be aware of. Also, the different bearings will have different sort of angles. Usually it's a 45 degree, but there are some where like there's like a chamfer on the inside of the bearing. They can differ. Yeti, for example, need an extended top cap to drop down over the top of the bearing. They need quite a specific headset.
Yeah. I mean, I've been testing a lot of gravel suspension forks recently, and they're all pretty much the same, bar one, which has a different angle
right
taper on the lower bearing
great
than everything else. And you can probably imagine that which one that will be.
Was it from our northern neighbours?
No, that would be from that would be from a certain US brand that likes to do things differently.
Right, okay, yeah.
It's also probably worth pointing out as well, depending on the bike, so we'll see quite a few more budget conscious brands use, so their frames will have a tapered head tube,
mm-hmm.
but they'll still run a narrow gauge, like a straight steerer. So it won't be tapered, which is going to change things up again. And if you've got a really old bike potentially and you're running, you can get around certain things by running a different external headset cup. And so it really all does depend on the frame for a start, mm-hmm. and then the fork, and making sure you know exactly what it is you've got first, and then working out what headset you need.
Don't try and do it the day before a bike ride. Not that I've ever done that.
To be honest, it's something that's pretty much disappearing on the road. Because most frame now are frame modules. They're integrated.
So you just drop the bearings in.
The fork is dedicated to the frame. So even when you're buying a frame set, headset's in it.
And
so then you never need to look it up because you've got a reference point there.
Yeah.
If you need a new one, it's one of them.
Mm.
And so it's something that is pretty much, my Park headset press is just hangs on my wall gathering dust.
Yeah. I do have a frame with an external, what I would call a traditional headset. And it was really easy. It just worked.
It's pressing headsets in is super satisfying.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it?
But if you've got the right tool and you're not banging it in with a mallet and a
bottle. Having the right tool, and especially having like a proper, going back to old metal frames, having like a proper face in a head tube is it's always very rewarding.
Yeah, yeah.
You felt like a craftsman.
Yeah. long gone are those days. All right, we'll move on to a bit more of a general question now. So with Isla Bikes having decided to close up shop, what other brands are out there doing decent kids' bikes for my 9-year-old? Should we go to you, Rob, for this one to start? And then I'm sure, Warren, you've got some.
Because I have kids.
You do have kids, yeah.
Makes me remotely qualified, I suppose. So, again, it's always dependent upon your intended use.
Okay.
And your budget.
Yep.
Also, maybe your frequency of use. Mm-hmm. Dependent, I guess my 9-year-old probably doesn't ride her bike as much as my 4-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So I can invest more in his bike in theory because he's going to get more out of it.
Yep.
So it's trying to weigh all that stuff up because kids' bikes now can cost a small fortune. But if you're going down the route of, Isla bikes, so relatively general, not necessarily mountain bike specific or road bike specific, they sort of just kind of covered everything. I would say the wheels and tires were maybe a little skinnier in order to save weight. In that vein, I would say look at brands like Ridgeback here in the UK. Generally, decently put together bikes at good cost.
Yeah.
And they kind of cover, those guys cover pretty much everything. And they have some good sort of 26-inch wheel options, which is what I'm guessing a 9-year-old's going to be. Yeah, definitely. Frog Bikes are another good one. They do mountain bikes and they do them with a suspension fork as well, which is good and bad. It depends on the budget, obviously. I would say at the cheaper end of things, avoiding a suspension fork, probably better, because the chances are really cheap suspension forks, in our experience, I think, especially on the mountain bike side, don't work particularly well, aren't always massively adjustable. So especially for kids, if they're lighter as well, they might not be getting much out of it and they're just lugging around all that extra weight for no real benefit. But then there's brands like Woom, which are really good. So actually my son's bike, his pedal bike, is a Woom bike. Okay. And when I put that together, I was blown away. Like Isla Bikes kind of paved the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And what those guys did was incredible, absolutely incredible. And it's so nice to see so many follow suit. But the Woom bikes are really smart, the way they color coordinate left and right. So the kids are able to kind of distinguish that stuff better. Shapes the levers. The only thing I'd maybe say on my kid's bike is the gearing's maybe a bit high.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's a solid little bit of kit and really nicely designed. So they do stuff. They do one called the Woom Off 5, which is fully rigid. So back to what we're saying, rather than drop the money on a fork that doesn't work so well, go rigid, spend the money, on other parts of the bike, which are going to be better catered for.
Help keep the weight low as well.
Helps keep the weight low, which is when kids are small and not as strong as adults, they don't want to be lugging that weight around. It also makes them more reluctant. Mm-hmm. In my experience, if they've got a heavy bike and they just chuck it on the floor, they're annoyed with it. They just, making it lighter just makes the whole experience easier.
Yeah.
So that Woom off five, fully rigid. I think it's around 900 euros.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the UK pricing is, but it looks decent. And I think if you wanted to go down the route of more mountain bike focused, the likes of Vitus do a good, really good option. Do they do your hardtail? Is it just a hardtail? No, they do a hardtail and a full sus.
Huh.
So they do options on both those bikes in 24 and 26.
Okay.
So decent fork, and they do a full suspension bike. Yeah. And we know their full sus stuff really good. So they range from 600 to 1600.
Right.
Depending on what you go for. And then in a similar vein, Nuke Proof, mm-hmm. they offer the Cub Scout, again in 24 and 26. That's just a hardtail. And I think the 26 inch offering goes from 1,000 to 1,250. Mm-hmm. Solid bikes. They're going to be heavier than the Woom that we spoke about, hopefully a bit more robust. And mm-hmm. if it's purely mountain biking you're looking to do, that's probably a better option.
Yeah. Okay. Was any thoughts on that?
Well, Rob's obviously the expert. Mm. I would say, you know, the reason, you know, one of the reasons for Ida's demise was they made such good bikes that had an incredible resale value.
Yeah.
So it's an incredibly buoyant secondhand market for mm-hmm. you know, kids' bikes, because kids grow out of bikes.
Yeah.
But
annoying.
But personally, from like my point of view, I mean, and I'm pretty sure it's probably the same for you. It's like, as soon as I was kind of big enough to handle it properly, just get BMX. Huh. Super tough, super simple. Kids can maintain them themselves. And look at all the best riders out there.
They've all dabbled in it, haven't they?
You know, they all cut their teeth on a BMX, yeah. and that's across road, mountain, track. You know, they're great simple bikes. They're easy to ride and they're easy to build skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
So
and maintain. Well, you barely need to maintain them. Right?
Yeah, you know. So it's kind of you'll get your cycling fundamentals from those. You know.
Right.
So unless you're taking your kids to trail centres and you know where you need an actual bike specific for that thing, if they just need a bike to, you know, bomb to or from school and ride out with their mates on.
Mm-hmm. BMX. Did I come across like a kids bike subscription thing? Was it Hope?
The Hope Academy?
Yeah. Is that still?
I believe so. Yeah. So you pay, I think it's a set fee every month, and you basically lease a bike.
Lease a bike. And then you get a new one when the kid grows out of it.
I think so. Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's a waiting list on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense. If you're, you know, like a cycling family and you're always out and the, you know, you make it like back to my original point, that sort of intended use, that sort of thinking about how much value you're going to get out of it. If you're going to drop a grand and then your kid's going to touch it once a month.
Yeah.
You're kind of shortchanging yourself. But if it's a weekly thing
mm-hmm.
and your kids are out all the time with you, then going down that route means, you know, like Woz says, when you get to the point and that they are growing out of it, which mm-hmm. they will, then it doesn't feel like there's a massive outlay. You're just swapping sizes around and that bike will go to someone else, and essentially someone else, like a car lease, someone else is kind of in charge of maintaining it to a degree. You know, you've got to look after upkeep and stuff like that, as you would with a car. But when it comes to the big overhaul stuff at the end of that lease, they'll take care of it. You just switch bikes out. You get an amazing bike that fits your kid. And it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
And those bikes are super trick, as you can imagine from Hope. Nah. They look unbelievably cool.
I'll bet. Yeah. Okay. So plenty to think about, but yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Lots of good options. That's the main thing.
Yeah. And ever more as well.
Yes.
You know, like Common Style, for example, they do them. Spesh had that wild, like, carbon fiber kids
balance 1,000-pound balance bike.
Like,
but then, I mean, the other thing is, a lot of times on kids' bikes, because I've done this, I've helped lots of mates out, where they've bought their kid a bike and they're always heavy, you know, the big multiple off the peg ones. But most of the tech that's on them is sort of slightly behind the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in like my garages, I had so many old bits and parts and old tyres and stuff that, you know, they brought around their kid's bike and gone, oh, it's pretty heavy. And I've been able to knock like 2 or 3 kilos out of it just by junking that, you know, cheap seat post. And I've got, you know, I've got a lightweight seat post knocking around. And you can cut it down because it doesn't need,
totally,
you know, you can just immediately just make the bike a better bike without, you know, with the outlay of just stuff that you've, you know, if like me, you've just got a lot of stuff lying around.
And there's brands like SDG who make like a junior kit So you have the better shaped bars, the you know, more appropriate width, better size saddle, pedals, all of those things you can buy as like a great Christmas present. If you're, if you're a parent, auntie, uncle, and your kid's into, you know, that kid's into riding, they're great little things, you know, to add on. And, you know, all of a sudden, that's the thing, you know, those kids bikes, like really cheap bikes, come with crap pedals. That they just nail themselves on straight away because they're so slippy when they're wet.
Yeah.
And you can upgrade those
instantly. Yeah. My nephew's like just got a Vetus kids bike. He's eight. Quite a small 8 year old. So he just got a brand new bike. His dad's just bought a Vetus as well, or Wrigley, I think, because obviously quite good at the moment. But yeah, like, just I just sort of think, oh, I could be like the great uncle. I haven't taught him to swear yet and haven't given him alcohol yet because he's way too young. But I can give him like cool bike stuff and lots of chocolate. So yeah.
There you go.
Perfect. All right, then we'll move on. So I don't envy this person particularly, but I seem to have found myself with an entry to the Dragon Ride Grand Fondo in June this year. I've never ridden a 200 kilometer plus ride in my life, so I figure I probably need to get some training done over the next 6 months. I currently use my iPhone to track my rides, but do you think I need to invest in a proper GPS if I'm going to get serious? My riding buddy uses a power meter and I'm looking at new bikes at the moment, some of which come with one as standard. Will my phone be able to link up to one? If not, can you recommend a fairly basic GPS unit for me? Woz, what do you think?
Your phone won't.
Okay.
Well enough.
Well enough. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah. You probably can if you are looking at a power meter. But I would say you don't necessarily need a power meter. You just need a decent training plan.
Okay.
You know, and Bike Radar is full of them. It, you know, Cycling Plus has really good training plan stuff almost every month. So it's actually, you know, it's working out in achieving that goal.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, yeah, get a GPS.
Right.
You know, not only because you're getting fast information straight in front of you. It's fine, you know, sticking your phone in your pocket and recording your ride on Strava or whatever, but that only sees what you did after, you know. And if you're working to a training plan where you want to keep up, you know, especially like if you're riding with heart rate or, you know, you want to keep up a certain tempo, having that information right in front of you all the time is really good. A lot of the, you know, if we were talking about this a few years back, I would have said, don't bother with cheap GPSs. They're all terrible.
Right.
You know, if it literally, it used to be, if you can't afford a Garmin, keep saving.
Okay.
You know, but now there are some really good options out there. Mm-hmm. You know, Sigma Rocks is really good. Hammerhead is really good. Wahoo, obviously they've always done decent things, and even, you know, some of the smaller sort of upcoming lands like Brighton and make some really, really good, you know, really good stuff. But then, you know, if you fall back, I mean, I tend to use Garmin most of the time, and Hammerhead as well, but mostly Garmin. And like Garmin's latest generation software, the latest Garmin Connect, even comes with like built-in training plans.
Right. Okay.
You know, so if you give it the correct data, you know, your weight, your height and everything, and in the sort of riding you're doing, it will literally give you a suggested training plan.
Okay. And will that beam up onto the screen what you should be doing?
Yeah. Yeah. It will, you know, it'll tell you, you know, it'll give you goals and it will set you goals and do all this thing. And it'll also tell you, like, you know, there's nothing worse than if you're working up to a big ride and you just think, well, what I've got to do out is go out and do loads and loads of miles. And then you end up just fatiguing yourself and always killing yourself. So the best way to get the best out of training is knowing when to rest.
Yeah.
And when to rest. Your rest becomes almost as important as putting in the, you know, the hard efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, you know, it's one of those things where you can overtrain and end up making yourself endurance strong, but deathly slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just turn yourself into a bit of a plodder, which on something like the Dragon Ride, you probably don't want to be doing. You know, you don't want to be spending the whole day being overtaken, knowing you can achieve it, but just going, oh, I haven't got, you know,
yeah,
you know, I've turned myself into a diesel truck rather than a sports car. You know, it's that sort of,
yeah.
And so I think, I would say, you know, a GPS and a GPS, a structured training plan. Power is interesting to have and it does work well, but you can get 90% of the benefits from just a you know, cheap heart rate monitor, and every GPS out there will talk to
that. It'll come with a strap, won't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Most of them come with a strap. If they don't, straps aren't expensive.
30, 40 quid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think.
And they can work cross brands, can't they? So
yeah,
it's not like you're tied in.
Yeah. You're not tied to anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just a standard amp plus sign.
Okay. Way simpler than a power meter as well.
Power's, you know, power, once you get it and you understand it, it's really good because it's one of those things that is a constant. Heart rate can be affected by a myriad of factors. Mm. Too much coffee, you're too tired, you're. you know, you're too stressed and that sort of thing. Whereas power is a constant, but it's quite a hard thing to get your head around.
Okay. You might need to invest time in, you know, it sounds like this.
There's a lot of learning with power to get the most out of it. Yeah.
I guess the other thing with that is, you know, if they're training for a 200 kilometer ride, you're probably going to not be training on your local 10, 20 kilometer loop, at which point actually a GPS thing is going to make navigation a lot easier for those longer training rides. Whereas a phone, you're going to rinse your battery pretty quick. Generally speaking, those little GPS devices are much better for navigating. I've also
yeah, and it's much better for also gauging. You know, you can gauge your. It's easy to gauge your strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so because if you're riding the same training routes all the time, you've got comparative data, so you can see where you're improving. You know, you're going, oh, I went up that hill faster, or I maintained a higher average speed on the flat, or you know, it's all those things. So it's a lot easier to break down into you know, what you're achieving and then knowing the next time. The problem with doing it on your phone is it's all retrospective. Yeah. So afterwards you can look and go, oh, I
did that.
Well, I did that. Whereas you've got it live in front of you. You know.
Yeah.
And also if you're going to put your phone on your bars and you crash, phones are more expensive to replace.
Yeah. Yeah. And big square. And
massive. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't, you know, I guess it's very easy to sort of look at GPSs and think, oh, I've got to get like a Garmin 1030 plus, but a 530 plus, that sort
of thing. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, Garmin, like all those tech companies out there, if we're just talking specifically Garmin, like the latest generation, the 1040, the 840, they're awesome.
Mm.
But the old 830, which has now been hugely discounted, or the old 530 instead of the 540, or the 1030, these are all hugely discounted. They're worth like 600 quid, you know. Yeah. The top end 1030 was like 600 quid computer. Mm. Now you can pick them up for a couple of hundred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you shop around, again, all those people that have upgraded, the second-hand market's flooded with.
Yeah.
With older GPS.
Yeah.
And so, and they do 99% of what the modern one can. Mm-hmm. They just do it with, you know, slightly crappier graphics.
Yeah.
And that's really not that important, you know.
Yeah. Great stuff. Okay, then. So we'll move on to our last question, which is, if there were two identical bikes, but one was a four bar and the other was a single pivot with a linkage driven shock, I guess you call that a faux bar, which would you choose, Rob?
Which would I choose?
Or does it matter?
No, not really, because it's sort of...
The prettiest colour?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it depends what, you know, what you're looking to get out of it. I think so much is going to be dependent on the kinematics and what the engineers have built into it and how it behaves on the trail. My advice with any of these things would be try and ride them.
Okay.
Back to back, ideally, but do a demo, ride the bikes, get a feel for it. They could be that they're... Depending on the, you know, we've ridden bikes in the past, maybe where in theory,
yeah,
that four bar bike should be able to, you know, isolate braking forces, pedaling forces, do all of this. But if the brand's screwed up the shock tune and it rides like a dog, then it's kind of like,
yeah,
great. All those promises, you know, it's just marketing hype.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much down to, you know, proof in the pudding,
yeah,
stuff like that. I'd say it's very rare you're going to have two identical bikes with exactly the same everything. So if you're out shopping, I would go and look at geometry first.
Yeah.
Spec, price, and weigh those things up. Which are those, you know, what matters most to you? Getting the geometry right, getting the spec right that you want, obviously reading all the bike radar reviews where we've probably covered the bike in the past. But, you know... single pivot bikes with a linkage can work incredibly well.
Yeah.
Those, we have tons and tons of examples. Marin, Kona have done it for years. And those bikes always review really well.
Yeah.
They perform brilliantly. Likewise, you know, since the patent for the Specialized, you know, FSR Horse Link ran out in 2013, I think it was, the market is flooded with good four bar bikes.
Yeah.
There are so many out there. It's, I think, you know, we've said it in another podcast, there's not many bad bikes out there now. So many are really, really good. So it is just drilling down on those details, working out exactly what you want from the bike and weighing up things like, the, you know, the real sort of foundations, the geometry. You know, you can change, you can't change the kinematics of the bike. You can change the behavior by tuning the shock. For example, but you can't change geometry. Geometry is more or less fixed. Okay, you can maybe do half a degree here, half a degree there with offset bearings and offset headset cups. But ultimately, that's the fundamental. That's the thing you need right first. You could have an, you know, the most amazing suspension design ever. Mm-hmm. But if the geometry is terrible,
it doesn't really matter.
What's the point?
Yeah. I guess like this sort of question often comes from, you know, when Spesh had that that horse link patent, no one else was really allowed it. And it sort of almost elevated into this like mythical, like the pivot placement of this is incredible. Whereas actually, like you said, you know, I rode a Marin last year in Trail Bike of the Year, which has got a, you know, it's a single pivot, faux bar, whatever you want to call it. Tracked the ground so well. It was amazing in the right place. And I guess, yeah, it's easy maybe to get hung up on those little details. And while they do matter and you can get it wrong, they're not always entirely fundamental to the overall performance of the bike.
Is there something, you know, coming from somebody outside of modern mountain bikes, is there something in, like I've said it before about gravel bikes and road bikes, etc., just forgetting the technology that's particular brand's bikes, just being honest with yourself on what you need.
Mm.
You know, and buying the bike that suits you best. Because, you know, from my sort of, you know, regular gravel excursions, tracking the amount of times, I'll ride past, you know, mountain bikers riding the same trails as me and I'm on a gravel bike.
Mm.
And I'm just going, you are so overbiked.
Mm.
You can't be having a good day because, you know, you're basically riding byways and bridleways on an enduro bike.
Yeah.
And you look like you're suffering.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be suffering.
There's always the argument of like, do you buy the bike for the most extreme stuff you ride or the stuff you ride most of the time? You know, and that definitely goes into it. There's also, you know, like Luke Marshall, who works with us, you know, he's got a thought at the moment of, you know, bikes are so good. Buy a bike based on kind of what you need, but also like what you like.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
If you like the look of it, and if you think, you know, the shop you're buying it from is like decent, or like you think the color's cool, or you like the fact that it's got, you know, orange Fox Forks on there, or a red coil shock, you know, whatever it might be, it's probably going to be all right. Or just buy it, you know, because there aren't rubbish bikes out there really at the moment.
No, there's not. And I think, you said about riding that Marin last year, we had Kotics in Bike of the Year as well.
So single good. Pivot.
Right, exactly. And the thing is, you know, maybe in certain situations and really specific scenarios where you're dragging brakes down a really rough section of track, maybe they're not quite as smooth as some four-bar bikes, for example. But they're relatively isolated scenarios. Mm. And a lot of the time, the benefits of how they ride will outweigh any of those small negative, and they're not even negative, they're just different traits, right? So I think a bit of what Woz says, and you know, being honest with yourself, making sure you're doing that, back to getting the fundamentals right for you, and making sure you're not just buying into whatever it is brands are saying, that's really important.
Yeah,
because there are so many good bikes, and I think we've, you know, the single pivot linkage driven thing, it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. So
if you're talking something that's like multiple pivots, multiple linkage, everything, I'd imagine that means you've got to be a lot more fastidious on maintenance and upkeep. So if you're somebody who's a bit maintenance phobic or not particularly fastidious, I'm looking at you, Tom, directly there, would something like a single pivot with a linkage be a better option because the maintenance scheduling wouldn't be quite as
I think you sort
involved?
Of- There's an element of like brand specificity on that because there are brands that do a better job of sealing their bearings than others.
Mm.
I think if it was me going into it, like I probably wouldn't buy the most complex linkages because there are so many to sort of sort out potentially there. I think, you know, four bar versus a faux bar, probably a similar number unless you're going something pretty wild. There has always been that sort of draw towards an orange.
I was about
which is a proper single pivot where there are two bearings.
Well, like, I mean, I was about to say when I bought an orange back in the day, and you know, aside from the fact that Steve Pete was riding them, making them look super cool, the fact that I only had two bearings to look after, so once a year I would just smack them out and put two new ones in.
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's as simple as
it's kind of like the you know because I like Santa Cruz, you know, I had a.
Yeah.
Big single pivot, you know, Super 8.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And
Super Light was the same as well,
Like, just super, super simple.
Yeah.
And then you know, it's like when Santa Cruz came out with, like, the VPP and APP, and like, I mean, suddenly, oh, God, you've just got complex now.
Yeah.
I just like this big girder off the back of it.
But at least they put grease ports in. They put grease ports in, which is great.
And
it's looking for those details when you are looking at a more complex design. It's like, can I access the bearings?
Mm-hmm.
Do I need, you know... I'm not going to name the bike, but there was one where I needed to change a coil shock. And to do that, I had to take the chain set off to access the shock bolt. And at that point, it's just, you know, pulling your hair out. So it's kind of weighing up all of those things, like what's said about maintenance and stuff like that, working it all out. But in terms of performance, I think you just don't need to worry. You know, it's always going to be an investment buying a new bike. So do your research when it comes to reading up on reviews, but don't just necessarily pigeonhole bikes by their design.
Yeah. Cool. All right then. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks ever so much, Rob and Warren, for your inputs and answering some questions there. We'll be back for another tech Q&A in approximately a month to 5 or 6 weeks, depending on when I schedule it. But in the meantime, don't forget you can email us your questions to podcast@bikeradar.com, and we will be back in a couple of days with another episode of the podcast. So thanks very much for listening.
Cheers, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends, or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.